Welcome back to Radio Row at the Tampa Convention Center. To review, the RNC will be gaveled into session today at 2 p.m. and immediately closed because of Tropical Storm Isaac, which is blowing through. We caught up with some delegates from Wisconsin earlier today.
We'll have this day to, you know, to get things done that we probably wouldn't have had an opportunity to see people that we haven't seen. So it's an exciting day.
Tomorrow, all the excitement should begin. We just have to find something to do today.
We still continue to campaign and talk about our candidates, and that we do rain or shine.
Mitt Romney rehearsed his speech at a high school today. He'll prepare to deliver it Thursday night. Some other notes, Donald Trump is in town to accept the Statesman of the Year Award at a Sarasota County Republican Party dinner. Some New Hampshire officials have already left, though. They're one of the states punished for holding their primaries early. They were given bad seating or worse at the convention. They were downgraded from delegate to honored guest. As we said, the roll call to officially nominate Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan has been moved to tomorrow, so has Ann Romney's speech introducing her husband to delegates. But today, when that gavel drops, the national debt clock that tracks how much debt has been added during the convention will be started. And it reminds us, we want to acknowledge one technological advance. It's not social media, it's not cable, it's not whatever's going to make that debt clock run. It's air conditioning. Yes, the argument has been made that the invention of the air conditioner by a young engineer in Buffalo in 1902 helped lead to the rise of the New South and has been in particular a boom to the Republican Party. John Steele Gordon wrote an opinion piece about it recently for the Wall Street Journal, and he explains his thesis.
Even in Washington, D.C., they have these long, very hot, very humid summers, and it just gets worse as you go south and west. And so air conditioning just made all the difference in the world, even for Southerners who, you know, were born to it and were used to it and had various tricks of the trade for staying cool. But even so, they love air conditioning.
It's hard for today's sensibilities to wrap their heads around this, but another reader of your column wrote about how his dad had the first air-conditioned drugstore in Wilmington, North Carolina, and that before that, they couldn't sell chocolate candy in the summer, and liquid medications would have chemical reactions, bottles would break. I mean, the fact that the South in particular didn't have air conditioning had an impact.
Indeed. It made people who weren't born to the South reluctant to move there because of the long, hot summers. And manufacturing didn't develop in the South to any great extent other than textiles, again, because the working floors were often just so incredibly hot that they were unendurable.
Yeah. And so people started to move away, masses of people leaving the South, which, because, again, it was, you know, economically behind in part because of the heat. So people start leaving, mass migrations, we know, to the North, places like Chicago. Segregation played a role in this as well. But how did the advent of air conditioning affect the South politically?
Well, once you had air conditioning, and also, of course, once you got rid of segregation, those are the two main things, people began moving South in their retirement and also sometimes to find jobs. And because of air conditioning, it was, you know, much more tolerable weather. And then, of course, also most of the southern states have right-to-work laws, which have been allowed since 1947 under the Taft-Hartley Act. So the companies could open up manufacturing facilities that weren't unionized, and thus they could save a great deal of money.
So people were moving to the South. In particular, Republicans were moving to the South. I mean, Ezra Klein wrote a column about this in 2010, and he said when a fair number of Republicans from the North used to spend winters in the South, but when air conditioning came, they could move there full time.
Well, I don't think that's the cause of the Republican resurgence in the South. I mean, the South used to be, from the Civil War up until the 1960s, the South was known as the Solid South because it always voted Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Even in 1928, when the Democratic candidate was Catholic, Al Smith, he still carried the vast majority of the southern states because he was the Democrat. They hated Republicans who were they thought were responsible for the defeat of the South in the Civil War. But beginning in the 1960s with Goldwater in 1964, I mean, the only states he carried besides his native Arizona were the deep South states. And the South has become increasingly Republican ever since because the South has always been a conservative area. I mean, the Southerners, the Democrats in say, FDR's time, most of them were very conservative politicians.
Right. Remember the Dixiecrats?
The Dixiecrats, exactly. Strom Thurmond in 1948.
Yeah. Well, Ezra makes the point that the Dixiecrats, these very conservative Democrats, were slowly replaced by Republicans who were moving to the South from the North. No?
Well, I think a lot of the Southerners turned into Republicans.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a migration of Republicans to the South. They started voting Republican after 100 years after the Civil War. Even after 100 years, you finally get over it.
Well, and then, you know, as we've been saying, as more people move to the South starts to grow in population. Other areas reduce in population, and suddenly you have more electoral votes.
Indeed. In 1950, the 11 Confederate states had 128 electoral votes. Today they have 160. I mean, Texas gained 4 electoral votes just in the last census. And Florida gained, too.
Yeah. And in fact, you mentioned Washington to start. Suddenly Washington, which was a sleepy, very, very hot, people forget how hot, you know, Washington can be in the summer, suddenly it's a year-round town.
Yes. I mean, it used to be a sleepy southern town. I mean, John F. Kennedy once said that Washington was a town of northern charm and southern efficiency. And that began to change, again, with air conditioning. The House of Representatives air conditioned itself in 1928. The Senate and the White House followed in 1930. But suddenly, Washington used to shut down early in June, and Congress was gone until October because of the heat. And of course, they had less to do in those days, or maybe that's not such a good idea, but...
Well, but what I find interesting that you are not sure if this is such a good idea, that air conditioning helped Washington be a year-round city, because you say it doesn't help the cause of limited government, which you support.
No, it does not help the cause of limited government, because when people are on duty in Congress, they're looking for things to do because they need a headline. So, you know, Senator Smoot, you know, moves on widget crisis. Well, if Senator Smoot is up in Montana fishing for trout, well, then he's not doing anything about the widget crisis, and the widget crisis might just solve itself.
So what else do you think we should know about air conditioning as we, you know, everybody, well, a lot of people have it, 86% of homes, almost all cars. You know, there are people who say, you know, of course, one side effect is that it's certainly not, you know, good for the environment, and maybe it's not so good that we now depend on it. You know, in a blackout, we're in trouble. But what else do you think we should know about air conditioning?
We're not going back.
Yeah.
You know, air conditioning is here to stay, and environmentalists can deplore the excess carbon and what have you all they want, but people are not going to give up air conditioning.
No. Can you imagine the conventions in Tampa and North Carolina this year without air conditioning?
Well, remember the 1924 Democratic Convention when they had 108 ballots before they nominated a president? Boy, they must have been glad to get out of there.
Well, I don't remember that.
Well, not personally. But.
John Steele Gordon, author of An Empire of Wealth, The Epic History of American Economic Power, and we'll link you to his op-ed about the impact of air conditioning on American politics at herenow.org. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's take a look ahead tomorrow on Here and Now. We're going to talk to a Tea Party leader. We'll take a look at the Republican National Convention through the eyes of Mormons, watching the first person of their faith get this close to the presidency. Later in the week, what a liberated, mysterious monkey seen here in Tampa says about the difference between liberty and lawlessness. It's a fabulous story. So be here for all of that. We're here for you. And don't forget, check out our photos and videos on facebook.com/hereandnowradio or at Here and Now. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service NPRI. I'm Robin Young in Tampa. Please join us to see what this week brings. Here and Now.